Fourth Canto, chapter 25, text 56. Evam karma su samsakta. Kamatma vanchito buddha. Mahishi yad iheta. Tad evan vavartata. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Being thus entangled in different types of mental concoction and engaged in fruitive activities, King Paranjana came completely under the control of material intelligence and was thus cheated. Indeed, he used to fulfill all the desires of his wife, the queen. Please repeat. Being thus entangled in different types of mental concoction and engaged in fruitive activities, King Paranjana came completely under the control of material intelligence and was thus cheated. Indeed, he used to fulfill all the desires of his wife, the queen. Purport. When a living entity is in such bewilderment that he is under the control of his wife or material intelligence, he has to satisfy the intelligence of his so-called wife and act exactly according to her dictates. Various shastras advise that for material convenience, one should keep his wife always satisfied by giving her ornaments and by following her instructions. In this way, there will be no trouble in family life. Therefore, for one's own social benefit, one is advised to keep his wife satisfied. In this way, when one becomes a servant of his wife, he must act according to the desires of his wife. Thus, one becomes more and more entangled. In Bengal, it is said that if one becomes an obedient servant of his wife, he loses all reputation. However, the difficulty is that unless one becomes a most obedient servant of his wife, family life becomes disturbed. In the Western countries, this disturbance gives rise to the divorce law, and in Eastern countries like India, there is separation. Now this disturbance is confirmed by the new introduction of the divorce law in India. Within the heart, the mind is acting, thinking, feeling, and willing, and falling under the control of one's wife is the same as falling under the control of material intelligence. Thus one begets children by his wife and becomes entangled in so many activities under the control of mental concoctions. Om Agyanatimiram Dasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Te Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachayani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtata Deshatayani. Believe it or not, this verse actually connects very nicely with the pastime of Lord Varahadev, the verse and purport. So I'll tie that in along with the class and glorification of Varahadev, and also speak on the subject matter of today's verse. Well, don't have too much time. Okay, good. So the story of Varahadev starts in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 13. It starts with Vidura inquiring from Maitreya Muni different questions. And it continues on until the 19th chapter, so that's seven chapters of the Bhagavatam devoted to Lord Varahadev. And of course, in other parts of the Bhagavatam, it's described as well, different details. So Vidura's inquiring from Maitreya Muni, he's asking, what did Swayambhuva Manu do after his marriage ceremony? Because just previous to this, Maitreya described how Manu, he was married, one of the progenitors, how do you pronounce it? Progenitors of mankind. So what did he do after he was married? So he approached Lord Brahma, and he asked Lord Brahma, so what is it that you want me to do? He's the son, and so Prabhupada glorifies this mood that the son should approach the father and ask exactly what he wants him to do, and he should fulfill that duty. He should be free from envy, not thinking that his father could be wrong or has bad ideas, but he should follow through his father's direction without any doubts. So anyways, he asks Lord Brahma, what should I do? And Lord Brahma says, he glorifies him as an obedient son, first of all. And then he tells him to become a progenitor of the whole universe to send forth all the living entities. So Manu agrees to this, and but he asked, how am I to do this? Where are all the living entities going to go? The living entities which I create, where will they stay? Where will they live? Because right now the Earth planet is sunk in the Garbhodak ocean. It's at the bottom of the ocean, so this Earth planet is actually the proper residing place for the living entities. So if you please can retrieve the Earth from the bottom of the ocean, then I can do my service. So then Brahma starts thinking, well, how am I going to get the Earth planet out of the Garbhodak ocean? And he's meditating like this, and while he's thinking, he comes to the conclusion that actually the only person who can deal with this problem, the only person who can set it right, is the Supreme Lord himself, Narayan. Narayan himself only. And as he was thinking this, a little form of a boar came out of his nostril, right? The size of the upper portion of your thumb, right? Palm-sized boar, very cute. But as he was watching this, as he was looking at this boar in amazement, the boar ascended to the sky, and he became as large as a great mountain. And all the demigods were amazed. How is this? A boar has all of a sudden appeared. And they began offering prayers to the Lord, Vedic prayers. And he enjoyed all of this. And then he descended to the Garbhodak ocean to retrieve the earth. And it's described that he struck the surface of the ocean with his hoof, and the ocean split into two halves, right, all the way to the bottom, so that he could retrieve the earth. And so then he went down, and he very easily picked up the earth with his shining white tusks, and he brought it up. And then Hiranyaksha came, and he wanted to fight with the Lord. So then the Lord destroyed him, and all the prayers were offered to the Lord. So then Vidura asked Maitreya, how did this come about? Right? Where did Hiranyaksha come from? Why was he so inimical? Why did he fight with the Lord? So then that whole pastime is described. And that starts with the pregnancy of Diti by Kashyapa. Kashyapa Muni was, they're great sages. They were also progenitors of the universe, right? So all the, he had two wives, well, he had actually 13 wives, but two of them were, one of them was Aditi, and the other one was Diti, and it's important not to mix them up. All the sons of Aditi were called the Adityas, or the demigods, and the sons of Diti were the Daityas, or the demons, right? So Diti, she was very lusty, that she wanted to have children. She wanted to beget children. She wanted to become pregnant with Kashyapa. But Kashyapa was in meditation at the time. It was at the the sunset dusk. And at that time, that's when the Brahmins perform their rituals. They do their meditation or the fire yajna. And at that time especially, isn't the proper time for any of these activities, such as conception. But still, she was very eager, and she couldn't control herself. She forced her husband. She begged him. And as it's described in today's purport, he had to follow her. He had to do what she asked. He was obliged, because she was such a faithful wife. So at an improper time, at the time of dusk, then they conceived of children. And Kashyapa Muni knew of the trouble that was going to come after that, because conception at the wrong time will cause Varna Shankar, unwanted population. So then this is a whole discussion in the Bhagavatam of the proper way to conceive of children, and marriage life, and all these different subjects. What was my point there? Right, so sinful activity, although it wouldn't be described as a sinful activity, but at least for us in the Kali Yuga, we can understand sinful activity, illicit sex, this is a very dangerous thing. The action itself might be considered very small, or it only takes a short time, but the reactions are wild and terrible, even if we can't perceive them in the beginning. Right? Of course, the Bhagavatam explains the reactions for one who who commits illicit sex. But then also, if you see the effect it has in society, so many bad effects. Right? Varnashankar means that unwanted population, right? Nobody wants such a child, actually. They have so many plans to stop the pregnancy. Right? They have their artificial means for suppressing, what are those called? Artificial, like the pills and contraception. Right? They have their contraceptives. And then they have abortion, because the babies come even though you may use contraceptives. So many sinful activities are created by this desire to have illicit sex. So many bad reactions. And because of this, then sometimes the babies will be born and then they'll grow up. And then they cause the servants in society themselves. They become thieves or rogues or sex mongers themselves. And then it's just escalating every single generation. Right? And such people, actually, they become miserable themselves. And the suicide rate is actually, the highest suicide rate is between the ages of 15 and 20-something, early 20s. This is when kids are actually becoming, you know, they hit puberty and then they start to realize all these things about the body, and then they engage in those things. And they actually rip away from you your very personality. I was speaking with Bhakta Richard about this the other day, that sinful activity actually steals from you your own personhood. Right? It's such a vile and dubious act that it's so against the nature of the spirit soul. So it destroys your good qualities, and you lose consciousness of yourself. And you see people go throughout life simply without thinking about anything. They just do what they feel they need to do, and just like animals, right? And then they die, and what was the use of that life? Right? No advancement, no steps forward. So this is the verdict of the Shastra, but we can also see it practically. Right. So we always have to avoid sinful activities ourselves as devotees. These sinful activities, of course, they destroy one's spiritual life. Atmaha, it's referred to in Isha Upanishad, killers of the soul. It's a figurative word. Nobody can actually kill the soul. But the soul's consciousness or the soul's potency is diminished until the point where you're actually hardly living. Right? You see that in the bodies of trees and the bodies of insects, where's the independency there? You know, there's something is there. The bug can go and, you know, go do this or that. But really, the independency, the nature of the spirit soul is diminished to a minimum, right? Because of that sinful activity. And for us in spiritual life, to avoid these things is actually essential, along with all of our spiritual practices, such as chanting the holy name, practice of devotional service. We have to avoid sinful activity. When Mother Vishakha was here, I remember at the farewell Sangha, she was speaking about this, how the four Vedic principles are actually the greatest gifts that Srila Prabhupada gave to us. They're amongst the greatest gifts that Prabhupada gave to us, and because they free us from so many impurities, from so many troubles in life. They set us apart from all other religions and all other practices of spiritual life, because it gives us that freedom to become pure at heart, to become sincere, right? Not just follow some religious practice for the sake of religion, but to actually make steps forward in spiritual life. And she was saying that when one breaks these principles, everything spiritual becomes cheap. Everything becomes cheap. It's unimportant anymore. You can't see the importance of it. It's in spiritual life becomes very difficult. Spiritual advancement becomes very slow. So we should always be careful in that respect. What does that say? People are becoming more and more degraded as the age goes on. That's, of course, the nature of Kali Yuga. It's the nature of time itself that things become degraded. Like, you don't see it here in Belgium so much because it's so cold that everybody has to cover themselves up. But if you go to, you know, warmer countries, like I'm from Florida, or, you know, other California, different places in America, then you'll see the way people dress is so licentious, sexually oriented. And it's becoming worse and worse, really. 50, 60 years ago, the way people dress now would be unacceptable. I mean, that's what my parents tell me anyways. And it's just becoming, it's young kids of the age 10 and 11, they already know about all these sinful activities. They're quite aware of what will happen or what they're all about. And they're simply waiting until they get older so they can do these things, right? It's even becoming a part of the educational system. I remember when I was in fifth grade, I was 10 or 11 years old, In the last week of our fifth grade year, we had a sex education course. So at the end of the day, at the end of each day, the boys and girls were separated, of course, at least they did that. But we'd take about 45 minutes until the end of school time, and just, they tell us all about, you know, what sex is all about, and the different sexual organs, and anyways, by Krishna's arrangement, I was sick that whole week, right? Except for the last day. And we all had to go home with our permission forms and, you know, get them signed and everything. But so the last day I came on Friday, and that was the last day of it. And of course, my friends all told me, said, "Oh man, you missed it, Rama. Wow, that was so good." Sick. But of course, then they're telling me, you know, they're all giggling and everything like that, because it's, you know, what kids don't need to know about these things. I mean, you naturally learn about these things when you grow up anyways. But the point is, you know, they're describing the different ways of having sex. Why would you describe that to such a young person? Why should they know about these things? I mean, you can go throughout life not knowing these things and you'll be a perfectly happy person. But the ideology about it is that, well, this is the only enjoyment in life. Materialists, you know, the atheistic materialists, he'll think, this is all there is to life, right? You're born once, you die, and that's it. So enjoy life while you can. And this is the way to enjoy life. And that's even explained in the Shastra, that this is the highest enjoyment within the material world. Mm-hmm. So, but they have no regulation for it, of course, and it's completely sinful. So then this mentality, this reasoning, it's demonic, right? You're taking young children and training them up to be sex mongers. That's the whole Western world, practically speaking. Right? And it's quite scary to think about that children are being born like this, like Varna Shankar, without the proper conception, without the proper consciousness. It's also described in this pastime of Diti and Kashyapa that at the time of dusk, Lord Shiva and all of his associates, like the ghosts and other cursed beings, they're traveling around. Their influence is strong at that time. Why is Lord Shiva associating with such persons? Because he's very compassionate. He sees mercy on them. The life of a ghost is very bad, because they don't have a body, right? But all the bodily urges are there, right? To eat, to sleep, to use the bathroom. But you can't do anything. You can't fulfill any of those urges, right? So it's a very cursed life, very, very sad. But he has mercy on these ghosts. So when he sees that living entities are not following the principles of the Vedic scriptures, they're not conceiving of children in the proper way, he says, okay, go have a body, right? So then that child is the child of is actually, you know, ghostly type beings. So that's, and you see that people like this nowadays are actually becoming quite evil-minded. I mean, I know, because I remember in school, kids 10, 11 years old are even, you know, so contaminated just at that age. So you can really see how this is true. And of course, this is like a type of fairy tale explanation of it, but it's you can practically see it in the world. The only way to rectify this whole situation is by hearing and chanting Shravanam Kirtanam, worshipping Krishna. So on that note, I'd like to continue along with the Varaha pastime. About 10, 15 minutes. So we're speaking about Aditi. Ditti. She she became pregnant at the wrong time. So these, her, she became pregnant with two sons, twins. And who were they? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Right, two of the greatest demons who ever strode the universe. Right. But these weren't just ordinary demons. They weren't just ordinary Varnashankar. They're unlimitedly powerful. While she was pregnant, the whole universe became dark. Right? The sun lost its shine. And the demigods became so fearful. What's going on here? So they approached Brahma, Lord Brahma, and they asked him, what is happening? And Lord Brahma explained, well, Diti has become pregnant with two great demons. Right? Well, who are these demons? So then he began describing. He said, my four sons, the Kumaras, right, they're transcendental. So they can travel wherever they want in the universe. They can go to any planet. And even they travel to the spiritual planets. So once they went to the spiritual planets, they went to Vaikuntha Loka. And there's seven gates in the Vaikuntha Lokas to pass through in order to come to the kingdom of Lord Narayan. And then he starts describing the kingdom of God. It's like almost he goes into a type of ecstasy, right? And he starts explaining how what it's like in the spiritual world. That all the residents of Vaikuntha Loka have forms exactly like that of Lord Narayan, with four powerful arms and blackish, bluish-black body, curly black hair and white, yellow cloth. And the air is scented with the honey, which is oozing from the trees, right? And when this air picks up the aroma of the honey, and you smell that aroma, then you're freed from all distress, from all anxiety. You become simply blissful. But it's said that the Vaikuntha Basis, they curse this air. Why? Why? Because when that air passes under their nostrils and they smell it, it's so pleasurable that they forget the Lord. So they curse the air. How dare you? You make us forget Lord Narayan. So they're in full love of Krishna. And then the plants and the creepers and all the beautiful flowers, they all offer their respects to Tulsi Devi, right? Because they know that Tulsi Devi is the most dear of the Lord. So in this way, there's so many descriptions you can read in the 15th chapter of the third canto. Very, very ecstatic descriptions. And then as the Kumaras were traveling through the seven gates to Vaikuntha, in the seventh gate, they were denied access. Right? Jai and Vijay were the doorkeepers. They thought, oh, these are small boys here. What are they doing? You have to do penance and austerity for millions of lifetimes to enter Vaikuntha. How can they enter? Right? But the Kumaras became angry with them and they cursed them. They said, you impudent doorkeepers, how dare you stop us? And so many other things. But they cursed them that either they would have to fall down into the material world, and either they could choose seven lifetimes as great devotees or three lifetimes as demons, great demons. So what did they choose? Three lifetimes as demons. Why? Because they thought that it was too long of a time to stay away from Vaikuntha. At least three lifetimes, that's okay, but seven, that's too much. So let us be born as demons for three lifetimes and go back to Godhead as soon as possible. And of course, there's so many other reasons for that Lord Narayan had the desire to fight, right? Within God, there's also this valor and, you know, chivalrous mood that he likes to fight. So then who does God fight with, right? He can't just fight with anybody. So he's got to fight with the most powerful persons. And who's more powerful than his own devotees? He invests his own power into his devotees. Right? So they came down into the material world, and just at that time, they entered into the womb of Diti. Right? And so many inauspicious signs were there during the pregnancy. The demigods were so afraid, they told her, stay pregnant with them as long as possible. Don't let them out. Right? So they stayed in her womb for 100 years, right? A little extra time. But when they came out, they grew very rapidly, and they had steel-like bodies, right? Nobody could challenge them. They're unlimitedly powerful. They would roam the universe, and the demigods would hide out of fear for them, right? The controllers of wind, the controllers of lightning and rain, they were afraid of these persons, right? There's a nice pastime in the Ramayana describing how powerful Hiranyakashipu actually was, that Ravana, he was preparing for battle with Lord Ram, right? So he was traveling around collecting wealth in order to build up his army and all of his resources. And he came to Bali Maharaj, And he asked Bali Maharaj, he said, please help me with this. I need wealth, I need gold, I need resources to fight Lord Ram. So Bali Maharaj said, okay, there's a mountain of gold over there. You can go take that. So he went and he saw this mountain of gold, right? With rubies and gems and so many different things. And Ravana was also extremely powerful. The demigods were afraid of him. And he tried to pick up this mountain of gold, but he couldn't do it. It was too heavy for him, right? So then Bali Maharaj came along and he said, you having trouble with that? He said, yes, what is this? So you don't know what this is? And he said, no, I don't know. He said, this is the earring of Hiranyakashipu. And Lord Vishnu came and killed Hiranyakashipu. And now you're challenging that same Lord Vishnu? Do you actually think you're going to win? So Bali Maharaj chastised him like that, but of course Ravana couldn't hear anything. So that was Hiranyakashipu, right? Unlimitedly powerful. And his younger brother, Hiranyaksha, was just as powerful. So Hiranyaksha, he was trying to find somebody to fight with. He was going around everywhere looking at the demigods. Who will fight with me? But they would simply hide. So when he went to the heavenly planets, he couldn't find anybody. He simply roared in anger. And he went down to the Garbhodak Ocean. And for years, he was in the Garbhodak Ocean smashing waves with his club, right? Simply looking for somebody to fight. And he came along the capital city of Varuna, the demigod of the sea, the controller of the sea and oceans. And so there he found him and he fell at his feet and he was mocking Varun. He said, oh, my supreme lord, please fight with me. And Varun, he was angered by this, you know, this impudent Hiranyaksha. But he controlled his anger and he told him, actually, we demigods have all become old in age and we're not ready to fight you anymore. So sorry about that. But there is one person who can fight with you, and that's the most ancient person, Lord Vishnu. And once you find him, then he will lay down your pride, and you'll be there with the dogs, Varun says to him. So find out that person, and he'll fight with you. He'll fulfill your desires. So of course, Hiranyaksha wasn't at all deterred by this advice, and he was excited. He was going to go find somebody to finally fight with. Prabhupada says that this is the nature of demons. They simply like to fight without reason. It's the mode of passion. So just at that time, Lord Vishnu had appeared as a boar, and he had struck the surface of the ocean and opened it up, and he was taking the earth out. And Hiranyaksha went, and he found him, and he was seeing this, and he laughed, and he said, "Oh, look, an amphibious beast!" Anybody know what an amphibian is? It's like a frog or a snake. They can live in water, or they can live on land. So he saw Varaha in the ocean. He said, oh, look, an amphibious beast. and then he insulted Varahadev in different ways. Says, just come and fight with me. Show your valor. But Varahadev, he had the earth on his tusk. So he didn't want to, and the earth was scared. So he wanted to save her first. So he fled. He went to the top of the ocean. And Hiranyaksha chased after him, calling him a coward. But of course, the Lord placed down the earth on the surface of the ocean, and he put his own energy into it, and he made it float above the water. Right? And then Hiranyaksha, of course, he was insulting him more and more, and the Lord felt pained by this. He actually felt pained by all this. But he became angry, and he showed his terrible anger, and he also retorted back, and he told him, let us now fight. Let's stop this useless talking. So then they started fighting, right? Yes. perfect comeback. So then they begin fighting. And the Lord has his massive club, and Hiranyaksha has his massive club. And so Hiranyaksha comes to smash him with the club, but Varahadev very easily moves to the side and dodges it. And he goes to smash Hiranyaksha with his club, and Hiranyaksha deflects it with his own club. And in this way they're pummeling each other with their clubs, right? And because of the spike on the top of the club, Hiranyaksha was bleeding, and the Lord was also bleeding, right? It's described. And because of this blood, they became enraged even more, right? And they're fighting, terrible fighting. And then, after some time, Lord Brahma and all the demigods came, and they were praying to the Lord. Brahma prayed to the Lord. He says, Please stop your playing with this Hiranyaksha. Please kill him. We know that you're the Supreme Lord, and we know that you can do anything. But a very inauspicious time is arriving. It's a dark time, and more inauspicious things can happen. So please desist from your playing and kill him immediately, and bring peace to the world. So then the Lord, he laughed at hearing this very hardly, and he looked at Lord Brahma with love. So what did he do then? He charges at Hiranyaksha, and he goes to strike him. But before he strikes him, Hiranyaksha strikes the Lord with his club, and Lord Varaha drops his club. He loses his grip. So he has a very good humor, Lord Varahadev. You know, they come to pray, please stop this playing with him, and he drops his club out of, you know, just to worry them more. And all the demigods freak out. They're thinking, alas, alas, everything is done for. The Lord has a very good humor. So then Hiranyaksha could have attacked him at that time because he had no weapon, but he respected the law of single combat, right? So you don't attack an enemy without a weapon. So he waited for the Lord to pick up his club again, which the Lord did, and he enjoyed this, his respect for the laws of combat, but he became even more angry. And then, oh no, I forgot. Sorry about this. It's a good story, then you forget details. Anyways, then the Lord, they began fighting more, and Hiranyaksha, he launched his club at the Lord, but the Lord very easily kicked it with his left foot and deflected it. And then he says, pick up your weapon again, O enemy. You're so desirous of killing me. Try again. So then he throws it, he takes his club and he throws it again. And the Lord catches it with his hand and he tries to hand it back to him. So would you like your club? But Hiranyaksha was so enraged, he wouldn't take it. So then he summoned a flaming trident. Actually, before this, Lord Varaha didn't even pick up his club. He simply summoned his Sudarshan Chakra, right? And he's holding it like that. So then Hiranyaksha throws his blazing trident, and the Lord slashes at the pieces with his Sudarshan Chakra. Right? And then Hiranyaksha comes up and he's punching him with his fists, one after another, but the Lord didn't even feel it. He felt as if garlands were being thrown on him. Right? And so then Hiranyaksha disappears and he creates a huge illusion. The mountains were throwing weapons, and a whole army appeared out of nowhere and went to attack him, right? And rocks and boulders and stones were flying from each direction like machine, as if they were being shot by machine guns, right? Bhagavatam says it's machine guns. No, I didn't make that up. Kshepanai, that's the word used. Prabhupada translates it as by machine guns. So that's even in the Bhagavatam, machine guns. Pretty cool. So then the Lord, he takes the Sudarshan Chakra and he throws the Sudarshan Chakra and it dispels all the illusions, cuts everything to pieces, and there Hiranyaksha is standing all alone. And he becomes angry again. And he goes and he starts pummeling the Lord in the chest and he tries to embrace him so he could crush him in his embrace. But the Lord, to his great surprise, he thought he had caught him, but the Lord was outside of his arms, right? So then he goes up to attack the Lord again, but the Lord kicks him under the root of his ear and the head, and the demon wheels around and his eyes bulge from the sockets and blood is coming from his body and his skull is crushed and he falls down dead, being kicked by the foot of the Lord. Shiva Rahadev Ki! It's probably like the coolest, you could probably make the coolest movie out of these pastimes. So many details. Why so many fictitious Hollywood movies? Just make Mahabharat, or Varadev's appearance, or Nrisingadev's appearance. These are the most ecstatic pastimes. You just become so absorbed in it. Sometimes I pray, if there's any spiritual desire I would like, someday I would like to, be involved or somehow watch all the different pastimes of the Dashavatars, right? See how Kurma was there under the mountain Mandara, and then see how Lord Nrisingadev appeared and tore to pieces Hiranyakashipu, just to see it all, as it's described in Bhagavatam. And actually it says that this is possible. The Lord can fulfill this desire if you want. So maybe someday. Let's see. A lot better than Avatar. Okay. That's the real Avatar. There's a pastime, one of my favorite pastimes in the Bhagavatam, of the battle between the demigods and the demons, right? There's a whole huge pastime. You know, it goes on for chapters and chapters of how Indra first, it starts with, he was so proud that his spiritual master, Brihaspati, entered the assembly, and he didn't respect Brihaspati. So then Brihaspati disappeared, and he wouldn't get the blessings of his spiritual master. So anyway, it was a whole pastime. The demons became powerful because they were worshiping his spiritual master. And it comes to the war of the demigods and the demons, right? And they're all fighting. All the demigods, the greatest demigods and the greatest demons were all fighting each other. And then the demons started displaying illusions, just as Hiranyaksha was, and there was mountains falling from the sky, and you know, naked women warriors holding tridents, screaming at the top of their lungs. So all these crazy things were happening, and they didn't know what to do. So they started, all of them started praying in their hearts to the Lord, to Lord Vishnu, and saying, "Please save us." And then out of the darkness, the clouds open, right? And Lord Vishnu comes down on his eagle carrier, and Lord Garuda lets out, you know, a tumultuous roar like an eagle. Right? And he comes down and he throws a Sudarshan chakra, and everything's dispelled, right? And the Lord comes and saves all the, and destroys all the demons. So you can just imagine, these are the most awesome pastimes, right? There's no reason for us to be interested in any other things. We can simply enjoy these pastimes, right? And we think about these things, and we think about, oh, how awesome the Lord is. And that's devotional service. That's worship of Krishna. That's purification of the heart. Right? And anybody who hears or anybody who recites these pastimes, the Lord is pleased with him. And when the Lord's pleased, there's nothing outside of his reach. There's nothing outside of his... he gains everything. Right? On that note, we'll end. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Inimical. I may not have said it without. He's saying in the beginning I mentioned how sinful activity makes one inimical, but. Yeah, it may have been a different word, or it may have been a different sense.
But something like that, that becomes sort of
He said that you lose your personhood.
Yes.
That's scary. Mm-hmm. But inimical, yes, it's also there, because one who's too sinful cannot appreciate the mode of goodness, right? So it becomes inimical towards that which is actually good. Yes, Mother?
Actually, especially when women are saying, particularly in relation to holy indulgence and illicit sex, he said, the women call it the condition so that he knows a deep and abiding rage.
Deep and abiding rage. Wow. Now you see how dangerous it is. Of course, I mean, you can think in this life maybe nothing will happen, but you know, then there's so many hells described, right, in the fifth canto, end of the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. So, anyway, it's a very big subject. Bhakta Freddy Crew.
Is there also mentioned what was the reason why the earth fell to the...
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking maybe somebody will ask that question. So I'm not exactly 100% sure, but I think it was because Hiranyaksha, his name Hiranyaksha, Hiranya means golden. I'm not exactly what the other part means, but it means that he was very lusty to attain wealth and money, so he would exploit the earth, right? He would steal all of the resources. That's correct. Yeah. And so he, because of taking so much gold and wealth from the earth became unbalanced, right? Couldn't stay in orbit and just fell into the ocean. Right. Yeah, there's so many wild disturbances in nature now. I mean, this situation in Haiti, right? And of course, floods all over the world and tornadoes. And in Florida, we got hurricanes. You know, Category 4 hurricanes means 125 mile winds per hour. And it goes on for days. You know? So many wild things going on. Why? Because materialists are upsetting Mother Earth. Mother Earth is retaliating this way. Okay, last comment. Right. That's a Ramayan. The Ramayan.
It was huge.
Gigantic. It was a mountain. Ravan? Yeah, Ravan. Ravan tried to pick it up. And of course, he could pick up mountains. He would pummel mountains to pieces with his fists. But he tried to pick up this mountain of gold, and he couldn't do it. The earring of Hiranyakashipu. Yeah, that's actually the funny thing. Yeah, it's all right, Balarsha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I couldn't hear anything. Couldn't hear anything. Wonderful pastimes. Thank you all for listening. Sri Sri Varahadeva Bhagavan Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki.